What's up? This is the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesey. You can find me on Twitter at ConnorNFLDraft. It's a two-man show tonight. Cole's out visiting some family for Thanksgiving. So I'm here with Dalton Miller. You can follow him on Twitter at Cowboys_DBM. It's Thanksgiving week. One of the best weeks ever, in my opinion, with the food, with the football, with the family, with the friends. It's a great week. Before we get started talking about football, Dalton, you doing all right?
Yeah, now that I've heard your country accent, I can't unhear it. So when you said Thanksgiving, I got real triggered.
Nice.
But I feel like you should announce to the world what you did the other day.
Nothing. We don't talk about that on Twitter or podcast. That's the second life, my friend.
Is that too controversial? You think some people may not like that?
That is just a fact right there, buddy. It is. And the way this has started just makes me seem like I'm like some like, oh my goodness, this is off the rails already. No, I am not a pilgrim. You know, in case Thanksgiving.
I'm so confused. You are from Virginia.
That is true. Gosh, it's all adding up.
It is all adding up. You guys have no clue what's going on. We're not quite sure either. It's a holiday week, and if you don't celebrate Thanksgiving the whole week, you're doing it wrong. Normally I save my Miller Lite drinking, and I'm sorry, but I will give Miller Lite free sponsorship. It's my life goal to have them follow me on Twitter. But I've been drinking all week because I can. If I don't have to drive somewhere, which school's out. So it's my holiday week. It's all I care about. And Thanksgiving is the best holiday. And y'all can fight me about that. At me. I don't care. And while you're at it, if you like pumpkin pie over pecan pie, just block me. Just block me already. So that's all I got to say. Dalton, no, you're out of my life. After this podcast is over, Connor, we're done.
Okay.
Done. Because I know how you feel already. Talked about it in the pre-show. I don't even want you to say it. I don't want you to tell the people about your trash take.
Pumpkin pie is better than pecan pie.
Except it's not. All right, except let's move on. Talk football so I can school you some more.
Well, if you want to go back to the previous podcast, we all know, you know, coming off of a huge road win in Atlanta that only the one and only Connor Livesey predicted on the last Talking the Star podcast that they would pull it off. They would.
What did I say?
I said
they're going to lose, and I said that's because when I say that they lose, they win.
Oh, no.
I knew they were going to win that game.
Pulling
the whole
that
time.
Card, Mickey Spagnuolo. Oh,
come on, I knew they were going to win. No, oh, Mickey probably picked them to win by 30.
Oh, man. I almost predicted the score right. That was my most impressive thing, is I was only a few points off. But hey, man, the Cowboys beat the Falcons. They have two consecutive road wins against two pretty good teams.
And honestly, they should have beat the Falcons even worse than they did.
Exactly. That is the crazy thing, is it's a pretty close game, came down to the game-winning field goal, but man, if Cole Beasley just catches the football, something he's done so well throughout his career, if Chidobe Awuzie can just get his head around, play the ball in the air, they probably don't even score a touchdown in that game. But those things happen, and that's why we're here to talk about them, and I think that's a perfect place to start. Is that first drive by the Cowboys, except the end result, that reminded you of 2016, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the closest thing we can say, you know, we've seen to 2016 in some time. That drive, up until the end result, was 2016.
We can talk about the first drive, but we really just need to talk about the past couple of games that Ezekiel Elliott has had in total. I mean, he looks like 2016 Zeke now. All that talk about him possibly losing a step, he's just not Saquon Barkley. He's not one of these quick, twitchy guys. He just gets it done. When he has any bit of room, he's getting 4 yards at the very least. The dude can just run the football. Like, I don't really know how else to describe it. Like, just get him a sliver of space to run through, and he will do it.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks, he rushed for 151 and a touchdown against Philadelphia, and then he went for
122
and a touchdown against Atlanta.
Both of those games, he had 95-plus yards, all-purpose yards, in the first half of each game.
Yeah, he had 36 yards receiving against Philly, and then he led the Cowboys in receiving with 79 yards against Atlanta. So, I mean, again, like you said, you know, there was – even at times I was
– that's the second time he's led the team in receiving in a win, right? The Giants game, right?
Was it Giants or was it Detroit? It was one – he definitely did it earlier in the year as well.
You're right. It was Detroit.
I thought it was Detroit.
Yeah,
but
it's Detroit.
Okay. Cool. But yeah, you know, it was just that first drive, you know, it was something to be excited about. They went down the field. They converted a few third downs. They made some plays that you kind of – again, the drop in the end zone by Cole Beasley, I thought at that point I was like, can they come back from this? Because they struggle to score points, and then when you leave 4 points – you know, off the scoreboard, that's hard to overcome, and somehow they did. You know, they didn't on that drive. I did want to ask you, would you have been upset if they would have went for that on fourth down and not got it? Because I was kind of banging the table for them to go for it. It was fourth and goal on the 3 or 4 yard line at that time. And I just thought, I was like, man, are these 3 points really that important? And they ended up being important. So I would, by the end of the game, I would have probably looked stupid unless they would have scored. But against the Falcons, I'm kind of looking at it and like, man, I feel like you're going to need more than 3 points here throughout this game in this drive here to make it, you know, a close game. And they obviously kicked the field goal, made it, went into halftime, down 3-6-3. So it was a close game. But I just thought, there, they got all the way down there rather easily. I thought they might have should have went for it there on that fourth down. What are your thoughts on that?
Connor, not only was I okay with them going for it, I was mad that they kicked the field goal.
That's how I was.
I needed them to go for that. You're on the road. You're 4-5. This game is for your season.
Yeah, I was
and
right there
they
with
just
you.
They just made a weak sauce call to kick the field goal there.
That's just
how I feel. Like I am somebody who will never be upset about being too aggressive, as long as it's not, you know, completely crazy. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
As long as it's not like you're. I don't even know. Like, I can't even come up with a situation in my head that I would be upset on.
Yeah.
Like, maybe fourth and goal from the 17? Like, fourth and 10 plus? Like, even if they were at the 8 yard line. All right. Like, I'm not, like, I don't love that call, but I would be okay with it because you're going out there, you're trusting in your offense, saying, listen, I think you guys can make it. And then also, I think that the defense is going to be able to get a stop from the 8 yard line.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you're kind of right on there with me. What my thoughts were when I saw them push out the field goal unit, because I just figured, I was like, man, you had a touchdown right in your bread basket that you dropped. You know, they got, I think Atlanta got away with a little hold on Amari Cooper on the slant on third down.
That was a bad ball too.
Yeah, it was on the wrong shoulder. But
I would like to talk. Dak, for the most part, had a pretty good game, but his mechanics were even more funky in this game than they normally have been, and it's all from the hips down. I mean, his upper body is usually pretty good, but he was like he just like wasn't driving and. He wasn't bringing his trail hip through and following through. He threw a couple passes with a just straight up stiff left knee. And you want a little bit of flex because the flex allows you to get your hips through, which allows you to generate power. When you are able to do that, you're not throwing all arm. So you're going to be more consistent. And a couple times he missed deep, and it was because his throwing mechanics were just completely off. And that's something that I've been noticing more. And he's playing pretty well, and he's taking less time week by week to throw the football. I tweeted it out this morning that his time to throw is going down. It was over three before week nine when Amari Cooper came. And in weeks 10 and week 11, in week 10, his time to throw was 2.86. And this week it was down in the 2.5s, which is, you know, top 10 to 12 in the league this week. That's what you want to see from Dak Prescott. Him planning on that back foot and getting the ball off after one hitch, because he'll never throw the ball without a hitch. He just, for some reason, can't do that. Another thing I would like to talk about with his lower body mechanics that really, really bugs me is he is so lazy in his drops. His footwork is atrociously slow. I mean, he just tries to glide back there. And when you already take those hitches to get ready to throw, I want you to get back to your spot as quickly as possible. And not only does it take him time, there are times in his shotgun drop where he just shuffles straight back like he's backpedaling. He doesn't even turn. And that's for when he's reading the right side of the field as well as the left. I understand if you're going to just step back on a three-step shotgun drop and throw a quick slant to the left if you want to step through that way. But, I mean, he's doing it on throws to the right as well. It's just, I don't understand how they can see that and be okay with some of the laziness that he has in his lower body. If he would be able to fix that, he would be so much more consistent on a throw-to-throw basis.
That's actually something that I actually pointed out in the offseason, especially about the stiff left leg, I want to say it is, with him, since he is a right-handed thrower. You'll notice when he drives, not because he doesn't drive through the ball as well as a lot of these guys, but you'll notice when he plants his left foot, when he doesn't distribute his weight well, that left foot will actually come up off the ground as he's following through with his throw. And like you said, that's a bad way to have your weight just not come through, your trail hip not come through, that back leg not come through in your throws, which generates your power, which generates your accuracy down the field. And he's had an issue with that even going back to last year, where you'd see him as he was releasing the football, when that trail hip didn't come through, the front foot would slide forward because of the way his weight distribution is. And that's something that you don't like to see, is when you're releasing the football, your base, everything that's lined up to make you throw the ball well, is moving as you're releasing the football. And that comes from multiple different things, your weight distribution, the amount of drive that you're putting on that front foot with your back hip, the amount, like I said, I think a lot of it has to do with the way he distributes his weight. You'll see him throw off of his, you know, leaning back, and he never distributes his weight well. It's always looks funky, you know, here and there, you know, he'll have a really
well, yeah, I mean, it's like
with good mechanics, but for a lot of the times, he's always throwing with his shoulders unsquare. You know, he's leaning on his back foot. He's on the balls of his toe, you know, feet, you know, up on his toes. And he just can never get that weight distributed to where he can put all his mechanics together and drive through a football, you know, the middle of the field, outside the numbers. It just seems like it's always kind of, this looks good, but this doesn't, or this looks good, but this doesn't. And it's just, that's just who he is. He's not a guy who, he's not a Drew Brees who just has.
But those are, but the, my issue is that these are fixable.
Of course.
Problems that he has. And I don't know how, when you're at that level, like, these problems can persist on a year-to-year basis. Like, I understand that you can work on things, and then when you get into the flow of a game, your natural instincts can come back out. I mean, people tried to teach Tim Tebow how to actually play quarterback for years and years and years, and it never worked out. But, like, that first throw, the minute I saw it when the All-22 popped up, my jaw about hit the ground. And I tried to make a video of it explaining everything, and then the audio didn't travel, and I about threw my computer out the window. But and I don't want to just sit here and bash Dak Prescott, because I felt like he had a good game, and there were a couple times where he was going down, about to be sacked, and was able to get rid of the football. Now, the one sack was his fault because he held the ball for like 5 seconds. But the one that Vic Beasley had, he just absolutely destroyed Lyle Collins with speed. And then, I mean, it's just, it happens. You get beat sometimes. But I felt Dak had a good game. So I want to give him, you know, his credit. And I want to give him credit for the way that he's played recently in general. I mean, he's had some fumbling issues, but I think the numbers are like 6 touchdowns, 1 interception. And obviously his passer rating has been good. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, the offense with Amari Cooper is just better. I mean, everything is working so much. It's so much more clean now. The offensive line is getting a push. I'm really happy about them, and I think that they'll be able to do the same thing this week. But
before we move on to the defense, because I do want to get that in, we do have a lot to talk about. But I did think, going back and watching some of the All-22 yesterday, today, I did think, and I hate it because this is nitpicking, and it's still better than what we had seen in the beginning of the year, but I did think this was the wide receiver's worst day as far as separating. They went deep to Michael Gallup a few times, and he was just not open on, you know, any of them. I think the first play of the game, they went to Michael Gallup, and it almost looked like he didn't expect the football. I mean, it wasn't a good ball to begin with.
He was open, though.
Yeah, he got open late.
He got open on that one.
In the route. But it was weird because, like, when he released the ball, Gallup was kind of, like, looking – I think he actually looked over his right shoulder. He was lined up on the right sideline, so he was looking over the wrong shoulder for the ball. And like I said, the ball wasn't good. And he did create a little bit of separation there at the end of the route, but he just wasn't expecting the ball, I guess, on that route. But they went deep to him again one or two times throughout the game. And both times, he's just struggling to get off that press coverage at the line of scrimmage and right inside of the box.
Well, so they went to him deep again twice. Yeah. And the one time I felt that he got held and the ball was a little bit overthrown because of that. And the other one was a back shoulder fade that wasn't on his back shoulder. So he just really didn't have a chance.
That was the first play of the final drive.
Yes. And that's one where you need to, and he's a rookie, so he'll figure this out, but you need to go up through the defender and get that call.
What, I'm just curious because watching
because he
that,
tried to.
I watched that same play this morning. Why do you think that was supposed to go back shoulder? Because his eyes never went to his back shoulder. You know, like to where you'll see when these receivers expect back shoulder, they almost swing their hips a little towards the sideline. And he almost tried to go towards him. And I don't know if it's because he either expected the ball to be there or if he realized when the ball's released that he had to break towards the middle of the field a little bit. But he almost started drifting towards the middle of the field, I thought, before the ball was even released. But I don't have the play in front of me, and I didn't GIF it or anything. So you probably have a better representation of that play than I would right now.
So, I mean, with that, I mean – I didn't really have an issue with the route or anything. I just felt that at the catch point, he didn't bring his left hand through. He just tried to like reach his right hand out and kind of, you know, turn his hips back to get to the ball. But he didn't try to bring that other hand through. And if he tries to bring that other hand through, he might get that call. And that's what I'm saying. Like, he just needs to figure out how to get a call, because you can in this league. You will get calls if you jump through guys. And the whole league is set up for the offense to succeed. So,
yeah.
That's all I really got to say.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
Zeke had a huge day.
I guess I just expected, like, Amari Cooper was in every single one of my FanDuel DraftKings leagues because of who they were playing. And I thought this, not necessarily that he played bad because he made some big plays in that game. I just felt like when you looked at the receivers, as far as their separation throughout the game, it didn't seem like they separated as much as I expected them to against a defense that has struggled so much with coverage in Atlanta. But we're nitpicking at this point. Again, no one kind of Most people didn't expect the Cowboys to win in Atlanta, so the fact that they were able to go up there, outscore the Falcons, come out on top, getting another conference win against a tough team is huge going forward, moving forward for this team. So we're going to take a quick break, come right back, talk a little bit more about the defense, the way they played, the way they held this Falcons team to only 19 points on the road in Atlanta. And then we want to talk a little bit more about some things that we've talked about in the past. We want to revisit those and then get into some of these big injuries that we have, we do know a little bit about. So we'll be right back after a brief break. Before we get started, I want to give a big shout out to Blogging the Boys. I want to give a big shout out to SB Nation, Fox Media, everyone that is a part of putting these podcasts together. Obviously I produce this one, but once I send them off, it's not an easy process. We got so many different people working in this Fox Media SB Nation program right now that it's so much work that's involved in getting these things ready. Prepared, sent out, posted. It blows my mind how much work these guys do to get these things out to you guys. So make sure you're giving positive feedback, not only for me, Dalton, and Cole, not only for Blogging the Boys, but just for SB Nation and Vox Media, all the hard work they put in to getting these things done for you guys. So do all that. Subscribe, like, rate, review, comment, whatever you have to do. Make sure you're doing it. Big shout out to those guys. Make sure you're following everybody's work on Blogging the Boys, Bruising the Boys, RJ Ochoa's shows that he has set, 750 and Ocho Live. Make sure you're following all that because those guys do great work as well. Very excited to keep bringing this podcast to you guys along with all the other content that we do over at Blogging the Boys. Let's talk a little bit more before we get into a few other topics. How good was this defense? I mean, again, you pull up the Falcons line. Matt Ryan's been playing at an MVP level. He was held to only 291 yards, 24-34 for 291 yards, a touchdown, an interception. Julio did have 118 yards, six receptions. One of those was a YOLO ball that he caught there in the fourth quarter. Other than that, I thought they defended him really well. They played, most of his yards, I'd have to pull it up. I don't have it up in front of me, but most of his yards, his touchdown came on Chido Bey Awuzie. Byron Jones is continuing to be one of the best corners in the NFL with his coverage. Leighton Vander Esch, I can't even begin to explain how impressed I am with him. When you look at DeMarcus Lawrence, who had, they credited him for a sack and a half, but I credit him with two sacks. He's playing in a dominant fashion, continuing to. Anthony Brown's playing well. Xavier Woods had a pretty solid game, even though he did miss a tackle that resulted in a big game. But there's little to complain about. Randy Gregory had another sack. I thought the defensive tackles played pretty well, given that they were so depleted. Caron Reed, Malik Collins made a couple plays. I can't even say enough how impressed I am with his defense. And that was, I think you would say, you would agree that that was by far their toughest matchup this year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that was probably the best offensive team they had. I mean, obviously they don't have Freeman, but Ido Smith and Tevin Coleman are both good football players. Their receiving core is obviously good. One thing I wanted to ask you, are you worried about Chidobe Awuzie?
No, I'm not. And I know I've been a huge fan of his, but if he was getting just burnt, toasted, crushed, I would be. But he is literally, I just feel like he's unlucky, man, because like he's right there on almost every single play. And he either, one, just can't get his head around, two, he never had good ball skills at Colorado to begin with, so this is just transferring over. But it's not like he's getting burnt to where he's just nowhere close to the play. He's just literally, the touchdown to Julio Jones, if that's not Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, it's probably an incompletion. So, I know it doesn't look good when you see him know, given up the numbers that he's given up, but he's there on 90% of those plays. He's just a tick late getting his head around, a tick late getting his hand up, or, you know, they complete a good pass. As we always say, the other team gets paid too, so sometimes they have good players that just beat your good players, and I'm not concerned with him at all. I know it's a little bit of a hot take, I guess, but that's just my feeling on it.
One more thing. You said that the Cowboys held Matt Ryan to 291 yards. That may be holding somebody in the modern day NFL. For comparison, your quarterback had 208 yards passing, and we felt like he had a good day. So we are a little bit behind where we might should be when it comes to passing in a passing league.
I think you just gotta, you know, we always talk about it on the air off there, but stats always have context. Second half, the Cowboys were ahead for, you know, it felt like when you look at the box score, they weren't. But the fourth quarter, going into the fourth quarter, you almost felt like the game was over before Matt Ryan, you know, connected with Julio Jones for that touchdown.
Yeah, but Connor, Matt Ryan still only had two more attempts than Dak Prescott did.
No.
What I'm trying to say is that Dak Prescott offenses, I mean, it's just not even close. Yeah, and that's not on Dak. That's on the offense as a whole. I mean, yes. they're just not efficient in the passing game. And that, to me, it's ridiculous because you obviously could be. You have talent at the wide receiver core now. They can't figure out a way to use it. They would rather just run these concepts where six people, because that's legal. But, you know, your three wide receivers and your tight end are running curls, and then guess what your halfback does? He runs just past the line of scrimmage and turns around. Instead of, you know, like running a Texas route or, you know, running, getting out in the slot, doing something, running go routes. There's so many teams right now that are running, I forget what the actual call is, but they run, you know, like a slot receiver. They run him on an out route, and then they run a deep skinny post or a deep post with their outside receiver, and then they run a deep corner route with their running backs, and they run that in the red zone, and these teams are just killing it with this play call. It's one that actually the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ran against the Washington Redskins, but Fitz tragic overthrew it, and it ended up being an interception. But it's a play that all these teams are using to get their fifth round undrafted running backs into the passing game, and all our number four overall pick can do is turn around and catch the ball 3 yards past the line of scrimmage and then get tackled at 6 yards because there's three guys on him. The way that they use Ezekiel Elliott is tragic. It's an absolute abomination. You have a top five pick at running back that you're sending on leak curl route, not even curl routes, leak routes where he's turning around and looking at Dak like, if you need me, I'm here. Instead of running something that is going down the field where he can catch the ball and turn and use all 225 pounds of force to try to break a tackle or some of the agility that he has to make somebody miss. It is absolutely, it's so frustrating to see how he's used. But back to the defense, because I got totally off track.
I mean, but you do got a point. Like, when you look at the way that these other coaches, these other offenses around the leagues use, and again, we always go back to it. And that's why I asked you last week, I asked you one time, you know, what was your thoughts on the play calling? And I know we talked about it for a little bit, and you said, you know, I thought it was better. And I was like, was it better or was it the same stuff? They just used it in a different sequence.
That was better last week. I thought this week was utter shit.
Yep. It was. I can't tell you how many times it was third and seven or third and six, and we got the same old slant flat combo that we see.
Yeah.
Every single third and manageable, and if it's not a third and manageable, it's a screen, of course. So it just gets so old, man. Like I hate to even keep beating that same drum because I feel like it gets overbeat sometimes.
That's all right. Scotty doesn't know.
Yeah.
but Scotty's gone after this season. I wanted to get back to the defense because I wanted to stay on topic, but I want to talk about Chidobe Awuzie a little bit. I think that this is kind of an issue. I don't think that it has to be, but like, man, you need to get your head around at some point. Like, these wide receivers are good. These teams are going to continue to pick on you. That Julio Jones touchdown, he turns his head at the 11-yard line, and never, never does Chidobe Awuzie turn his head. He catches the ball at the 2. Yep. Never turns his head. That's terrible. You need to find those cues. You need to get your head turned and find the ball. His coverage skills are great. And he tackles well. I mean, he does everything well except turn his head around and get his hand on the ball.
Let me propose something that I don't want to propose, but I feel like I have to.
Yes.
Is he a safety?
The best play he's made this year. He might be.
The best play he's made this year was the Alshon Jeffrey pass breakup where he covered 25 yards in 3 seconds.
He very well might be a safety, but they're not going to put Anthony Brown out there and put Jordan Lewis in the slot.
So just play Jordan Lewis where he should be playing as an outside cornerback.
No, Jordan Lewis is a slot corner. Nope. Anthony Brown could play on the outside.
I love Jordan Lewis on the outside. I think he's better on the outside than he is on the inside.
Well, he's 5'9", so that kind of makes things tough.
Go watch him.
I just want the guy to play.
No, I know. Just go. Watching Jordan Lewis clamp Evan Ingram last year in New York on the outside, because that's how New York uses Ingram most of the time, is either in the slot or the outside, just made me so happy. Seeing a 5'9 guy just clamp a 6'3", 6'4 guy is just so cool to see. But, again, well, we're getting
off topic, but Leighton Van Der Esch, Jalen Smith, next year they're going to be the best linebacker duo in the NFL. And I don't know if it's even going to be close. I mean, think about it. Like, are there other good, like, other great linebacker duos? Like, I can't think of any off the top.
4-3 linebacker? I mean, I guess you're not talking about, like, outside linebacker, rush.
No, I'm not talking about rush linebackers.
I got you.
I'm talking about stand-up, off-ball guys. Like,
Doesn't Tampa Bay have two guys? I mean, I know they have
Quan.
Don't they have another? Isn't Levante David on their team? Or am I just drawing a blank?
I don't know. Good question. I don't pay attention to irrelevant football teams until it's time to play them.
I mean, you're right.
This linebacker core is phenomenal, and they have edge rushers. I mean, I think that the more that Randy Gregory plays, the more snaps he gets, the more comfortable he'll get back. I mean, he just hadn't played football in a really long time. I think it's taking him some time to get back into it. But he's starting to play better. He's a liability against the run. But that part of that has to do with him playing as many snaps as he has to with all the injuries on the defensive line right now. The interior played well for being, you know, backup guys for the most part. I mean, Malik Collins dropped that interception, but there's a reason he's a defensive tackle and not a corner or a wide receiver. Yeah. And it's not just because he's 300 pounds, but I felt like they had a good game. I felt, you know, Tank always has a good game. I mean, he's just, God, he's one of the top
five
defensive linemen in the league, right? Between interior and edge rushers.
I mean, most people would probably laugh at that, but I think so. I think
what he does against the run is something that isn't talked about enough. And then obviously the secondary is pretty good. I think that if you were to tell me next year that you drafted a corner, put Chidobe at safety, and had Chidobe at free safety and didn't draft one, I think I'd be okay with that. Even if you don't get Earl Thomas,
I agree.
I think that they're going to get Earl Thomas, but yeah. I mean, that's a story for the offseason. But Julio Jones, he had 6 receptions for 120 yards, but I didn't feel like he killed us.
No.
I felt like
he had most of that right there the last, you know, the touchdown was like a 36-yard touchdown, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, 34-yard touchdown. And I felt like Mohamed Sanu had, like, 10 catches, and then I looked at the box score, and he only had 4. But, like, he seemed to be the one that was killing us the entire game.
Nope.
How small did you feel when your draft takes were crushed when Calvin Ridley, the guy you wanted, dropped the ball, and the guy that you crushed intercepted it?
How many touchdowns does Calvin Ridley have?
And on top of that, the player hater himself commented on it.
How many touchdowns does Calvin Ridley have this year?
7.
Okay, yeah, I would still. I'm not saying I'd take. I'm not saying knowing what I know now. I'm not saying that I would be just.
I would absolutely at this point take Leighton Vander Esch, but that's more off of team need than anything.
Of course.
But I still think he's a better football player. But I think Leighton Vander Esch at this point, I mean, what is his ceiling? I mean, that's something that I feel like we need to talk about in the offseason. Because given his physical profile and how quickly he's adapted to playing football, it's really kind of scary when you think of what he could be off of what he already is. Other than that, real quick, I don't know how much time we have left before break, but I wanted to get into one last thing, and it's not about defense. It's about special teams. Both, I feel like Chris Jones is having an off year. 43-yard average, and it just doesn't look like the ball's coming off his foot real, real well when he does have a chance to launch it. I mean, he was in a dome. It just didn't – man, it just feels like these punts are bouncing in front of the returners, and he'll get a couple yards off of the bounce, but just feel like they're not flying like they used to. Also, we need to talk about Brett Maher. What is going on?
He can't
kick it from the right hash. And then it looked like in the extra point, he stubbed his toe before kicked it, but you're on turf and you're an NFL kicker. How does that happen?
But the thing that worries me is when he misses that extra point and then he comes off to do the kickoff and he can't kick it out of the back of the end zone. I'm like, are you hurt? Like, what's going on? Because, like, I get you missing an extra point here and there. It always happens. We saw it happen last night in one of the best games ever. But when you miss the extra point and then you come out to do the kickoff and you kick it to the 7-yard line, I just don't get it. I don't, like, you're known for having a huge leg, and not only are you, you know, not accurate with your huge leg, but now you're not showing that you have a huge. I don't get it. I don't,
Connor, listen, we just got to deal with it for the rest of the year, and then our Lord and Savior, Rodrigo Blankenship, will have a star in his helmet, the most electrifying special teamer in college football. Putting every single kick through the uprights, Jeez. Doing it with swag. Man, I love that guy. I'm going to write a feature on him in the offseason. I'm going to get that kid drafted in the 2nd round by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Before we take our final break, we do have a little bit of something I did want to talk about. Jeff Swaim has a fractured wrist. He did get surgery on his wrist. His timetable has not been announced yet on when he's going to be coming back. They don't see it being season ending, but it could be a multiple week thing. He's been playing really, maybe really good's a little bit of a stretch, but
well, relatively for what we thought going into the year.
He makes plays that these wide receivers, I mean, like that ball he pulled off his shoestrings. I've seen so many of our, I watched Witten kick the ball with his foot, that same ball.
Listen, Witten was 37 years old.
I know. I'm just saying that you don't have a lot of people on your team who are making those plays, and he does. He went back to the football on that first drive.
That was beautiful. Gosh. That was so pretty.
That ball gets picked off if it's to Blake Jarvis.
Well, I don't know if it gets picked off because I don't think the linebacker was going to be able to get his second hand on it, but it would have been a broken up pass if he would have just sat there. He came back at that thing hard. I mean, that was really impressive. And doing the little things like that is what you want to see from a guy who really on a normal roster wouldn't be a tight end one. But
no, he's a tight. He's a perfect tight end too, in my opinion.
You know, he's a perfect tight end too. And hopefully, when we draft T.J. Hockenson with our first pick that we trade up for to the top of the second, you know, I mean, he can be that tight end two guy until, you know, maybe Dalton Schultz gets a little bit bigger. But
Dalton Schultz is making a few plays here and there too. You know, it's not flashy,
Dalton Schultz has definitely looked better in the past few weeks. But Jeff Swain being hurt hurts the team because you don't have somebody that you have that confidence in can be that safety blanket.
So what are they going to do? Well, we're going to give you that answer right after this break. And we're back. We're talking the star. We got a few minutes left with you tonight. And we proposed a question right before the break. What are the top Cowboys going to do at tight end now with Jeff Swaim out for at least a few weeks, it seems like? Their options are rookie, fourth rounder, Dalton Schultz, third year player, Rico Gathers, or Blake Jarwin, just not looking too hot when you look at it.
You know what's funny?
What's funny?
Is you just tried to say Blake Jarwin's name and your connection almost went out.
Well, that's perfect. That is what
I had trouble hearing you, but I knew it was coming. But it was I went in and I was like, yeah, that's about how that sums up his season so far. I think
it's Rico, right? He's been the best blocker, and I don't know.
No, I think that they'll rotate Schultz between Schultz and Rico because Rico was out on Zeke's big run the week before. Like he's been out there by himself before, which is absolutely terrifying. But he's as a blocker, he's definitely the most physical of them. Knowing what he's doing, I still question if he knows what he's doing out there, but when he's out there and somebody tells him, like, you block him, he can do it. Like, physically, he's got it all. He just needs to figure it out.
You know how the center always points out the mic or the will or whatever pre-snap? I just imagine that Tyron Smith or Lyle Collins points at him pre-snap, and he's like, Rico, block him.
Yeah.
Just like what about at the defensive end is like him. That's who you got.
What about this? No. Tight ends should not be blocking defensive ends, Connor. How many times do I have to tell you?
But you know they are in this offense.
Tight ends don't block D ends. Yes, I know they are. What about this? This is a little bit different. Scratch 11 personnel. Anything over 50% of the time. Run it about 50% of the time with one of the tight ends. And then between 12 personnel and 10 personnel, run that 50% of the time between the two. Now, hear me out here. Run 10 personnel and use my guy, 85-5, as an H-back. So you have an extra defensive back in, but you have somebody who can actually blocking that little guy instead of a big guy trying to block another big guy. Brown is 230 pounds and he looked a lot better in this game than he did the week prior.
Yeah, no, he did. And I would like for you to
have him in the slot, have him in punch formations, and have him motion punch inside. They ran a couple. But I think another thing that they should do is run more 21 personnel. Use Rod Smith. Holy hell.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say maybe instead of Noah Brown, and again, they won't do this because they aren't creative in these ways, but maybe use Rod Smith as your you're calling him a tight end, but he's your H-back, you know?
Yeah, use him as an H-back. He can lead block. He's 6'3", 235. He's almost as big as Jameis Olawale is. Yeah,
exactly. I agree.
And Olawale doesn't block.
No. He's actually
not physically, at least.
No.
He'll get in front of somebody, but Rod Smith can get in front of somebody too.
Exactly.
And Rod Smith is more of a weapon, so you can use him as a threat.
But we don't know that anymore.
I think that you need to run a little bit more 20 personnel or 21 personnel and use Rod Smith to your advantage. He's not some slack. I mean, he would start on a couple of NFL teams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers being one of them.
I love Rod Smith. One of my favorite players on the team. Just
dude, that
doesn't
catch
make
that he
mistakes.
Had. Also, can we talk about this? Why can he not throw that route?
I don't know.
Why can he not throw a flat route to a running back?
Well, see, I thought
he always throws it downfield. Throws it inside shoulder.
I thought in Tennessee when he threw it to Zeke. It might have been Philly.
Like you thought, like Zeke screwed something up.
Well, because Zeke pointed at himself afterward on the broadcast. I thought he was supposed to go more, run like more of a. I guess it wouldn't be a wheel, but it'd be more of a wheel out of the flat, up the field. And he pointed at himself because Dak was making a weird face, and then Zeke pointed at himself. I was like, oh, he's probably supposed to cut up field more. And then he did the same thing with Rod Smith, and I was like, maybe he just sucks at throwing short to his left, because both of those were short to his left. But
that catch was phenomenal to watch. But I mean, there's a bunch of ways that you can circumvent needing or being hurt by losing Jeff Swaim. Because if our season comes down to losing Jeff Swaim, did we really deserve to have a season in the first place?
Nope. But we don't deserve to talk anymore either, because we are out of time. We're going to be back with you Thursday morning, the Thanksgiving special podcast from Talking the Star. Make sure when you're driving to go meet up with your family, your friends, eating a delicious lunch right before the Cowboys take on the Redskins at AT&T Stadium on Thanksgiving Day. Make sure you're turning on the Talking the Star podcast, checking it out, listening, getting caught up with all the news, information, whatever else you need. We got it for you. We're Talking the Star. We'll see you guys on Thanksgiving.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears and video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.